My name is Michael Waller. I lived in two station cottages from 1934 until 1965. The first thing I remember about the war years was in September 1949, on September the 3rd. I remember when war was declared and my mother crying, because the First World War had only been over for 20 years. My neighbours, station cottages, were named Mr. and Mrs. Ponsford. They had two daughters, Vera and Enid. They took on two evacuees from London, Rita Simmons and Sheila Brown, who I became friendly with as a child, and we used to play on the common and get up to all sorts of things. The common, by the side of the cottages, we used to play a lot. We used to play cricket and rounders, and we used to climb trees and generally enjoy a youth on the common playing. At that time, of course, it was double British summer time during the war, and so we had light evenings. I had to go to bed at 7 o'clock, and I could still hear everybody else playing on the common, which I was very annoyed about, because I wanted to be there with them. But let's stop there for a moment. Can we stop there for a moment? Schooling. I went to Effingham St. Lawrence, I think they call it now, school, primary school, when I was 5. And from what I can remember, it was quite a happy period in my childhood there. Stuart Adams was the headmaster, and his wife was the governess. I remember also I had a stuffed lion on a plinth in the corridor of the school. I don't know whether it's still there. There were outside toilets in the playing fields, and I had a little problem one day, and I got stuck on the toilet outside. It was freezing cold, and the teacher, Miss Parker, had to come out and fetch me in. And the other teacher there was Miss Dixon and Mrs. Hardiment. And yes, and now Stuart Adams didn't do a lot of teaching from what I can remember. He did the odd lessons with physical examples like weighing bits and pieces when it came to weights and measures. And he used to get volunteers, us kids, to help him weed his garden. So if we could get out of an arithmetic lesson, everybody put their hands up, and special ones were chosen to go and weed his garden. I was also chosen by him to fetch his cucumbers from Mizzen's market garden just down the road. Stop, I'll stop there.
Ladies, can I get anyone a drink, please? Are you... No, you're okay? You sure you're fine? Yeah. Okay.
Still in the primary school. The lodge opposite the school, we had allotments where we used to grow our own vegetables. And we were taken for walks in the fields. And we had sports day, playing cricket, etc., up past Curtis's farm, in a field at the back of Curtis's farm. We used to go up there and play cricket with the school. What else can I say about the school? There was also a big yew tree in the garden, in the school grounds, which I notice is not there now.
Did you have a swim in the lodge swim?
Yes, yes, but that wasn't until later. Not while I was at the primary school. And
so then you moved on to secondary school.
Right.
Did you?
I was going to say something else about the primary school, about the playing field.
Yeah.
that we had, which opened in late spring, where we sometimes, did I say that before?
Yeah.
No, where we had, sort of, if on a fine sunny day, we would sometimes have gather in a group and have lessons sitting down on the grass in the field, which was all very pleasant. And the classes were graded into A's and B's. And I went from 1A to 2A, which I think was the top. And yeah, that's from a junior class to an A class, A1. And then the top was A2. And then there was a B class, B1 and B2.
What was Stuart Adams like?
Stuart Adams was very, how can I put it? He was a character. Stuart Adams was a character. He used to wear a trilby hat, and he used to tell us all sorts of anecdotes. He was quite a bit of a comedian, and he generally was quite a pleasant chap. I remember he had a Morris car, which we all envied, and sometimes when he gave lessons, he spoke to us about the fact that he visited nearly every county in England, I think, he used to say. Generally, I quite liked him, and his wife too was very pleasant. I enjoyed the school there, and my mother used to take me on the carrier of her bicycle and take me to school from Effingham Junction, which I suppose was about a 2 mile bike ride in those days. And also, I used to walk back home from the school, which was a pretty good walk on short legs, and sometimes a car wouldn't pass me. There was no traffic at all. Excuse me. And my cousin, who worked for Bowman's Bakery, had an Austin van, a white van, and as I was walking along, as I was approaching the hill where the letterbox was, I would suddenly see him appear with his van, and he would give me a lift back to the junction. let's stop there a minute. Still in the primary school, something else I remember. We had anthracite fires with perspex fronts on, which sent out a lot of heat. And we used to place the school milk around the fires to warm it up. And we took it in turns to go to Curtis Dairy to fetch the milk in the crate and bring it back to the school. I can also remember the cream freezing on a frosty day and the ice on the top of the milk, which we quite liked. these are all childhood things I remember, you know. And Miss Hardiman, I think she was a miss, rather a large lady, buxom woman, she taught music, and we all sat crowded around the piano and we used to sing folk songs, and she encouraged this and that. And we used to take it in turns to take the red flag and stand out in the road to help the children cross the road to in case of traffic, you know, to like the present lollipop lady, if you like.
What about picking up munitions when the Germans bombed the station?
Oh, From the primary school, I then moved on to what was then called Effingham Central School. I must have been about 10, I suppose, 10 or 11. And I was there until about the age of 13, probably about the age of 13, a bit earlier. And my memories of Effingham Central School were quite happy memories. Mr. Hewitt was a headmaster. There was a playing field, which is at South, first of all, there were allotments on one side of the school nearest to the road. There was a driveway which led to the lodge, where we used to go swimming. We were allowed to swim. We had permission to use the swimming pool. And it was a tree-lined drive, chestnut trees. I remember we had conkers and things on it. Sorry. And to the left of that was a football ground where we played football. Then just to the back of the football ground, there was an ash-felted playground. And to the left of that was a more grass, a sort of field where we used to play shinty. And we had running on sports day, and it was used for general sports. The classes were divided up into houses. We had Sheridan, Howard, and Green. Red was Howard, yellow was Sheridan, green was, can't quite remember that at the moment, but there were three houses, and when it came to sports and games, we all sort of competed on a house basis to give it a bit of competitive edge. We always did PT. We had to strip down, and we had PT. There was domestic science was on the agenda, and so was woodworking. We had woodworking. We had the assembly hall where we always assemble in the morning. We always started with prayers and hymn singing with the teachers on the stage, and the day's a day's taught by the headmaster, Mr. Hewitt, and. We had woodworking and also, what do you call it, not science, we talk about land, plants and everything, and nature's cycle of growing. That was arable farming, that was also on the agenda. We had football team and I don't think we played cricket there. I can't remember that, but the caretaker lived in the gatehouse just by the entrance to the school. I forget his name. And we were taken to school and home by a coach. The coach I remember was Bland's. It was a blue coach. It was quite a streamline-looking coach, and it went via East Horsley. And the other one was a Tillingbourne Valley coach, which took the pupils to West Horsley. What else can I say? Oh yes, Christmas time, we used to put on a concert. The school put on a concert there, and a dinner was all also laid on by volunteers. And I can remember it was sausage and mash at the time during the war. Braised sausages, I quite liked them actually. We used to have good school meals. The school meals were good. My mother used to help in the kitchen. And yes, I could remember the school meals were very good.
So what years roughly would you have been?
These years were the 1940s. Now, during that period, during the war, the early war years, I only had half a day schooling because the afternoon was taken up by the Strand School, which were an evacuated school from London. So we had the morning and they had the afternoon. So I probably missed out on quite a bit of schooling there. But I enjoyed it. Got another time off. We had enjoyed our school. I think school holidays was about 5 weeks or something, which seemed a lifetime at that time. So we were back on the common playing and doing all the other things. I'll stop there a minute. Lord Walterhouse lived in a house called Norwood Farm. And we, as children, we spent a lot of time there because he had a separate bungalow from the main house which housed evacuees who I became friendly with. And in charge of them, I remember, was a governess. And she was quite ambitious, if you like. She wanted she had some connection with Lord Waterhouse. I don't know quite what it was. I wasn't very keen on it, but anyway, I used to go to this bungalow and play with evacuees. The house itself had an orchard full of Cox's orange pippins, and I remember we used to help ourselves to these apples. And he had a barn, which we used to play in this barn, and a swimming pool in the front garden, beautiful garden. And his wife, Lady Waterhouse, laid on a Christmas party for us kids and evacuees, and which was all very enjoyable. And I think she did quite a lot for different people and charities. Yvonne Arnault, the actress, lived in Effingham, and I think Lord Waterhouse actually bought this house for her. In some way they were friends. Anyway, her husband, McLean, I think he was, had the pig farm down there. And us children used to collect acorns for his pigs during the war.
For
Yvonne Arnault's husband, yes. Yes. And, so she was a well-known figure in the village. There was also an actor who lived in Surrey Gardens. His name was Desmond Tester. And he appeared in two films, and they've still been shown on television. One was The Drum, and the other was The Four Feathers. And the credits still show his name on the list of actors that took part. There was another chap I seem to remember who said he was an actor at one time and used to tell me all about his famous connections. I think it was a bit eccentric. His name was Dijon, like a French name, and his wife. And he used to walk. He walked with a bit of a stoop. And he talked very quietly, and I think he fantasized a lot. And he used to walk to the Catholic Church in Effingham and back. He was a regular churchgoer.
So where did he live?
He lived in Surrey Gardens in Effingham. And there was a lady there by the name of Winifred Outon, who was taught acting. And my sister was involved in amateur dramatics with her. She was a bit of a slave driver, I believe. She used to upset my sister quite a bit. But she was involved in amateur dramatics at Effingham.
So where did they put the plays on?
The Memorial Hall at Effingham. And I think up at East Horsley, the village hall. And I see now the dramatic group at the time were the Nomads, and I think they're still going from what I saw in a recent magazine. Yeah, so that was a Mr. and Mrs. Edwin that used to be involved with that as well. I remember them. Now, during the war, also, the Canadians were over here. The WVS laid on the canteen in the Memorial Hall, and they used to sell these meat pies, which I found delicious, homemade meat pies, lovely crispy pastry, I remember. And all the social life of Effingham Junction sort of revolved around the Memorial Hall. I was in the Boy Scouts, we had the Girl Guides, and of course all evacuees were joined as well. And we laid on a concert party for the Canadian troops. And there was a Ken Birch who played the piano. He was quite a good musician and the accordion. I used to play the guitar a bit and sing, and the Scouts, and we used to put on a concert for the Canadians. And they also used to have film shows, cine film shows. And I remember one of the films with a Strawberry Blonde with James Cagney, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And they also had Felix the Cat cartoons.
Did you know Yvonne Arnault?
I didn't know her, no. I didn't know. She was above my station, I think. I think she was quite a big woman, and she was a brilliant concert pianist, which I used to have a 12-inch 78 record of. And she was a brilliant concert pianist. She was quite clever. So, that's what I can see. Then, of course, she had a private road which led down to her house. And when we were younger, my brother and several others, Lloyd Pettit with his terrier dog and ferrets, we used to go rabbit shooting. Well, these are all things I did during that time. I had a 12-bore shotgun, my brother had a 12-bore, and we used to shoot rabbits. And our friend Roy Pettit had ferrets, and we used to pet the rabbits out. This all went on during the war years.
Well, you had to eat.
Yeah. And then, when the bombing came, some incendiaries were dropped and landed on the common, unexploded. And us kids, well, two of myself, Mr. Jock Gorman and myself, were collecting up these incendiary bombs. I suppose they were about a couple of feet long, with a fin at the end, yeah, quite long, and unexploded, and we just collect them all up and pile them all up. And we were hauled in front of the class at Effingham Central School in the assembly room, and given a right ticking off by Mr. Hewitt, and I believe the local police came in, because we'd been warned about these bombs, and so we got a right ticking off about it. And I remember they eventually buried these bombs by the side of the road between Mala Medini's and Effingham Station, along that straight bit of road there.
On the right, Mala
Medini. Yeah, on the right-hand side of the road. I think I could go straight to the spot now and tell you where they were buried. A landmine landed at Effingham, at Mr. Garnett's farm, which is at the back of the common. There's a cinder path that went down by our cottages past the railway sheds, and right at the end, it is a right turn, right bend, and Garnett's farm was on the left. There was a big gate there, and I used to deliver the church magazine down there. And a landmine landed on his
pool. Mike, can I ask a question? Did Sir Guy Malabadili live in Slater's Oak?
Slater's Oak.
Thank you.
That's right. I also remember walking back from school in those days, a couple of horses which had been knocked down or killed. It was right outside. That was Indian Farm. That was Indian Farm. And I also remember...
Sorry, what was Indian Farm? Where Guy Malabadili lived?
No.
No. That was Slater's Oak.
Right.
Yeah. And
I can explain to you on that one.
I also remember a car accident by Slater. So we heard this car whizzing along. We were on the cricket ground, and it turned over and landed in a ditch, and the driver was trapped underneath, and it took some time to release him. Then of course the cricket ground leading up to the war, on the ground itself was a searchlight unit. So this all had to be brought back to its natural state and converted back into a cricket ground. And we had the help of prisoners of war to do this, cutting down all the long grass and landscaping it and getting it back into some playable condition. Dr. Sutton, who was the president of the club, got a friend of him who was a very good artist and came down and painted a picture of the workers cutting the grass with scythes, and we still have the picture. I believe the original is either in the cricket club pavilion or my nephew or somebody may have it. I just don't know where it is at the moment. We'll stop there.
We took a copy of it.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah, I've got a copy.
Lovely, lovely place.
Yes, I started work, my first job. I left Clark's College in Guildford. My sister worked in the typing pool at Halsey Towers for the Central Electricity Board, and she gave me a little hand in getting a job there. And the offices were all wooden huts joined together by a central passageway, and I was at the end hut under the South East England region of the electricity distribution area. The other areas were Scotland, Wales, North East England, South East England. It was covered the whole area. And it was all the transmission. All the top bosses were there. They lived in the main... They lived in huts, wooden huts. And the ladies who lived in the main building. They had accommodation there. And when it came to meal times, we used to buy tickets, which were sixpence at the time. And we used to walk over to the main building. They had a dining hall there. We had waiter service. I remember one waiter called Fritz. where he was from, was, I think, he certainly wasn't Welsh. And the dining room had a minstrel's gallery. And we had a snooker room. I used to stay behind after work and play with a snooker with an older man who was in the office. Scotty, his name was. He was a commercial artist, actually, not an engineer at all. He was a commercial artist, and a very, very nice chap. And I used to stay behind and play snooker. And we had a marvellous Christmas party there with a big Christmas tree in the main entrance hall. They had a lovely lounge there with a radiogram where we used to play records, and all the girls used to come in. We had a bit of dancing. They had a club with a bar. Whether it was licensed, I can't remember. I didn't drink at the time. But I remember the first ice cream coming there after when war finished. And there was a local shop, sweet shop. I'm just trying to think of the name of them. And word went around the offices that ice cream had come in, the first ice cream. So I hopped on the bike, went down to the shop, and brought back ice cream into the office. The first ice cream they'd had since before the war. Right, my actual desk was situated by a window. I was looking out on allotments. And come mushroom time or something like that, I could just open the window, nip out, and get a few mushrooms, you know. And at the Horsley Towers, there was also a rifle range, where they had 2-2 rifle shooting, which we thoroughly enjoyed. I had a big lake where there were pike, fish, and we had a sports hall where we had table tennis, and we had a tennis court. It was like a holiday camp, in fact.
Right.
I believe it was previously owned by Sopwith, the aircraft chap. Before that, I think it was a girls' school afterwards. And there were cloisters where all the records, all the cable records were kept for the London area. They were in big metal filing cabinets. And when somebody rang up from head office in London who wanted a certain section of a cable route in London, which had an identifying number, a route number, I had to nip over to the cloisters with a key, unlock everything, and fetch this file out with this particular route of cables, and get prints off, because we had a printing room on a drum where it was vitagraphs were taken off. And I used to send a copy up to the head office so they could detect where the fault was in the cable, which they had to pinpoint, and which they used the cable records for. It was all very security at the time, and it was a Flintstone Gothic-type building, and with turrets, cloisters, and I remember as a youth there of 14, and chasing all the girls around the corridor, and we had a lot of fun there. We had fete days. We had a fete in the grounds, and all this kind of stuff. I'll stop there. Yeah. Right. Effingham Cricket Club. Now, I'll just, yeah. Yes, I was a member for some time. I was the MAC secretary. The president was a Bill Shepherd, who was a builder who lived in Surrey Gardens. He was the only member of the club who had a car at the time. It was a Rover. The members I can remember of the cricket club were mainly considered of railway people. A few names I mentioned, Harry Trish, Ben Barnes. I'll start from here with the cricket club. As I probably previously said, the ground was prepared and re-landscaped after the searchlight unit was positioned on it during the war. And there was no pavilion. And the first thing we had was a wooden shed-type building with a pull-down pull down front flat where we had lemonade being sold, and we had a copper tea urn from which tea was obtained. The tea urn had to be filled up from a tap in Adrian Essler's land at the back, where he kept a cow. And I can remember an occasion when there was a Nobby Penfold and Tommy Hall were carrying this copper urn to fill it up with water, and they were chased by Esther's cow, which was all very funny at the time. So we had no pavilion, just this hut where teas and lemonade was served. And we had a marquee where we had the actual teas with trestle tables laid out. So that was that side of it. Toilets were non-existent. It had to be taken behind bushes, and that was that. I think we did have a corrugated iron arrangement with some sort of bucket or pan. I don't know, I forget that. And Essler went through a period where he had a bit of a dispute with our president, Dr. Sutton, over something or other, and he allowed his horse to trample all over the wicket, and we arrived one day to find all these hoof prints all over the ground, and there was a bit of a kerfuffle about that. Him and Dr. Sutton didn't seem to get on together. Adrian Essler was a character. He was very forthright in what he said. He didn't mince his words, didn't take to fools kindly. He wore a straw Panama hat. And when he went to bat, he had his straw Panama hat, open neck shirt, loose sleeves undone, no socks, no pads, and scruffy white boots, and used to go in at number 11. He did make a few runs at times, and he also knew the rules of cricket. He was a very good umpire. And we had a bit of a row with one of the teams because he no-balled a bowler from the square leg position. How he could see from that position, I don't know. But that caused a bit of a kerfuffle with the opposing team. Essler also was very keen on making homemade dams in wine. And he used to invite some of us round to his kitchen. They had a big oak wooden table, got out a big hunk of cheese, set the glasses down, got the bottles out, which were incidentally still fermenting in some cases. He would pour out the wine, and half a bottle would turn white, so you could only drink the top half. and then he used to carve up the cheese, and that was that. And he had, of course, this Rolls-Royce van, which was looked a broken down old thing with a bolted door, and he sort of had to climb over this door to get in it. He had all his tree cutting material, tools in the back, because he was a tree surgeon. And they had this role was the same. When it was a local derby, when we played East Horsley, for instance, we went in style in his horse and trap, and we were covered in horse hairs by the time we got there. Essler was well known in the village and all around. He was married. Incidentally, was married, and I did meet his wife once because we used to go carol singing around his house. This was in the war years, of course, when he was married. And so I don't know what happened to his marriage. He was of German origin. His education was a public school education in Aldi College, I think it was. And he was very keen on cricket, as I say. He always used to call me, Waller, how are you doing now, Waller? What do you do today? And if I was in the garden, but he used to stop in his horse and cart and have a chat, you know. And so he was a well-known character.
What number did you bat at?
I used to open sometimes, then I used to go down the list a bit. I bat in all positions. I used to play wicket-keeper as well at times, and I got a nasty bang on the leg doing it. And I remember the time at the cricket ground when we had loads of spectators. All the cars used to line up down the drive, and that Harry Trish, our secretary, used to go round with the collection box and used to get quite a bit of money. And I remember an American getting out of this car while we were playing and coming over while we were batting, say, "Hey, you guys, can I take a photograph of you guys?" You know. and that was interesting. I also remember we had an all-day match, a team from London called Ivy Dean. We had 12 aside, and they had a coloured player, a tall chap, I remember this, and I didn't realise he was old as he was, but he was getting on a bit. And he was in the outfield one day, and a high ball was hit, he went to catch it, and it caught him straight in the mouth. He missed it, and I had to cart him off to hospital. It knocked his teeth out. I understood. He was around about 70 at the time, so he wasn't a young chap. I remember that incident. And, of course, we always help after the game to roll the wicket, and with a big concrete roller that was heavy, and we had a big Dennis mower, which was a devil to start at times, which was kept in the tool shed at the ground. And he used to stay behind after a game. He used to get the regular helpers, he used to get the players, were all just interested in playing and going home afterwards. So it relied on the regulars to help keep the ground in trim. And there was always work to be done during the week at odd times, and practice days were Tuesday. We had nets down there, and we did have a matted wicket, concrete-based matted wicket down there. And then, of course, our president later was Dr. Sutton, and he managed to raise all sorts of funds from various people and get them to become vice presidents and donate some money. And we got enough money to build the Cedarwood Pavilion, which we all helped to build. And we had the concrete foundation. And when we got to the last bit at the end, it overlapped the foundation by a few inches, so we had to adjust that. And anyway, it was all built, and we had a celebration and opening night. And from then on, we had a bar, whereas previously we had to go down to the Lord Howard for any after-game drinks and a game of darts. And so I'll stop there for a moment. Back to 1939, and then it was the start of the phony war, as they say. There was no action. And I can remember the station, FM station, having a gong which consisted of a train buffer. And I used to bang this gong, this buffer, as a practice air raid siren. I can remember that. And then the LDV was formed, Local Defence Volunteers, which consisted mainly of railway men. They wore an armband, and they used to parade and practice on Effingham Common to the left of our cottages and the bit there. And us kids used to take the mickey out of them. And later on, of course, they got uniforms and rifles, but they were first off Local Defence Volunteers. And they consisted mainly of railwaymen. I remember the railwayman who worked at the booking office. He was a Jack Gamgee, his name was. He was the first chap I remember who's been working in the booking office. And Mr. Ponsford, who was our next door neighbour at number 2 Station Cottages, he was also a signalman. He worked in shifts with my father. He was a brilliant gardener. You could get to his house from the platform by walking up a pathway and a few steps under the booking office, the part where they used to house all the bicycles at the time, and luggage and whatnot. And I could walk up there if I came off a train and not show a ticket, because I used to walk up into his garden. And Mr. Ponsford, he was a very nice chap, I remember. And he had a dog called Chip. And so that was the part I remember of the station and the booking office.
Can you describe your house to me? What was your house?
Yes, the house had two upstairs bedrooms, no gas lighting, we had to use candles for lighting. Downstairs there was a living room with a range, a cast iron range, which we had to use coal for firing. And the oven where we used to roast our roast dinner. We used to roast chestnuts, baked apples, and by the range. And then we had you go out of the living room and to the front door, and there was a passageway with a larder under the stairs where we used to keep cheese. We also kept mice. We used to put traps. And then there was the front room, which we used to use for special occasions, and where I had a grand piano, two easy chairs, and an open fire. We used to have some beautiful log fires. We used to collect logs from the common. The chimney used to get sooted up, and we used to have to sweep the chimney every so often, and soot came down there like nobody's business. Then there was at some later stage, a house that had a bedroom built on at the end. So there was a downstairs bedroom as well. And then we had a scullery with a sink and a concrete boiler. And it was a high ceiling, and we had a... I think my father made a clothesline, which was operated on a trolley system, where a pulley, where he pulled it up when he didn't want it. It was a high ceiling, and we had a geyser, and I think we had a gas cooker, and a meter where we had to put money in. Our baths used to have to be taken in the kitchen in a galvanised bath. The water used to be boiled on the gas stove, and there was a coal... store just outside. We just outside the back door. Turned to the right was an outside toilet with an Nelson closet. I used to get trapped in there at times, because if anybody came to the back door, trays whatever it was, and I was trapped in the toilet. I used to have to wait till they finished and went. And my father made a shed out of railway sleepers, and we had chickens at the bottom of the garden. Wire fenced off. We grew potatoes, and we had vegetables, leeks, Brussels sprouts, and some roses, and a damson tree. Damsons were prolific. We had a damson tree outside the downstairs bedroom. We used to get a lot of damsons, and also damsons grew on the hedge at the bottom of the garden. Now, at the bottom of the garden, there was a house. It was two semi-detached. At the bottom, the first one, the Blackwells lived. Mr. Blackwell was a plate layer on the railway.
Not Betty Blackwell?
Yes, Betty Blackwell lived there. She had a sister, Daisy Blackwell, another sister, Josie Blackwell, and Margaret Blackwell. That's four sisters, isn't it? Yeah. And next door to them was the Fullers, Wally Fuller. He was a well-known character that liked his ale. And he was always off down the pub, leaving his wife and the kids at home. And Wally Fuller always did a bit of umpiring as well. He was well known down at Lord Howard, because he was always down there. And then the next house down was the station master's house. And at that time, it was Mr. Jack Morland. He was the station master, and he had a son called Jack, which I used to mess about with. We went to Boy Scouts together. And he had steps down from his house. You could walk straight onto the platform. Then beyond the Warlands house, which was a detached one on its own, they had the railway sheds. Now, the railway sheds, just after the war, Mr. Warland got several of us kids, if we were interested, to scrape all the blackout off the windows of the carriages with razor blades fitted into holders, because during the war, the blinds used to be pulled down in the carriages, but they weren't wide enough to cover the four windows, so they were blacked out all round the edges. And after all, this all had to be scraped off. So us kids were working in the railway carriages, scraping all this black art paint off the windows, and earning a few bob at the same time.
So how many of you were there living in your house?
In my house, apart from my mother and father, I had a sister, Mary, who was the eldest. I had a brother who was 5 years younger, and then myself, who was another 5 years younger. And so I was in the three M's. It was Michael, Morris, and Mary.
So there were five of you.
Yes. Another, before I go any further, for some reason or other, my father, who was a signalman, was transferred to Hampton Court Railway Crossing, level crossing signal box. And he had to cycle there from Effingham, which was, it must have been 15 miles or something. It was quite a long way. He used to have to cycle it. And especially at night, and the war was on, and the guns were going, there was flak and shrapnel flying about, and that mother used to get a bit worried. Anyway, that was a period where he worked at the level crossing in Hampton Court, and then he came back to work at the station again. And there were times when his shift takeover didn't turn up, and he was called out at all odd times to fill in, which was damn annoying. I think he got a Christmas day off once every 3 years or something, because you used to have to work late terms, early terms, and middle terms. And it was all a bit, he very rarely got the full day off at Christmas. And he finished up with a very low pension, incidentally. And so that was all about that. How's it going? During the war years at the station cottages, I also remember Wool's ice cream. That must have been after the war, because ice cream wasn't available during the war, was it? Let me think. It must have been before the war. It must have been before the war. The Wool's ice cream man, with his three-wheeled trike, and used to stop opposite our house, or just to the right of our house, on the other side of the road, on a Sunday. And my mother used to make a jug of tea for him. And he wanted some bluebells, I remember, and we went collecting bluebells for him, and he gave us a penny for collecting bluebells. Then going on a bit, during the war years, a bomb landed where the station is and where the main line divides. One line goes to Waterloo, the other goes to London Bridge, and between them there was a civil war. There still is a substation. And I think they tried to hit this substation, but they bombed it. The bomb landed. I didn't hear it during that night, but when I woke up, there was a great lump of plaster come off the ceiling and landed on my bed. So I didn't hear that, but they missed the substation. Then, of course, there were the doodle bugs. And I can remember, a jeep coming over the hill there, over the railway. This doodle bug coming over, all these Yanks piling out and diving into the ditch, using obscene language, and I could hear from the bedroom window, you know, and I heard this doodle bug come over, and then its engine cut off, and we all waited, you know, and I think it landed at Hatchford or somewhere down that area. Then there were the times when people used to, service people, especially Wrens or the odd soldier or whatever, used to catch the last train down from Waterloo, and the train finished at Effingham because it didn't go any farther and used to go into the sidings. So they used to knock on our door, could they put up for the night? And we used to put up one or two at night time, you know. And I also remember somebody was drunk getting off the train, lying down in the middle of the road on the downside of the bridge. We saw him from the window of the house. I was up in the bedroom, and we had to go out there and turf him off because the car would have come over or something and run over him. He's right in the middle of the road, drunk as a lord.
So were the Wrens on the way to Portsmouth? Were the Wrens on their way to Portsmouth? Were they sort of going to Guildford, Portsmouth or something?
They probably were, yeah. So we did put one up. Then we had, opposite our house, something else I didn't mention, there was an army camp. A hut, which had over there. The army were there, and we were invited to a Christmas celebration, I remember that. And we had the anthracite stove in the middle, with a bit of chimney going up through the roof. It was all very warm, and friends were over
British
there.
The British Army, or the
Canadian? Yeah, the British Army, this was. Yeah, I think they were associated with the Searchlight Unit, and on the cricket ground, probably. One of them gave us a couple of sets of golf clubs, I remember.
Do you remember the Searchlight and Gun Unit that was up here by U3 Cottages?
I remember more of that end. I do remember the army camp up Beach Avenue.
Canadians
on the left-hand side. Because us kids used to go up there and mingle with them. And we used to have dinner with them. They used to give us mints and tatties in their cherry cans. And they used to give us their penknives. Also at Effingham Station, there were the odd times when the Nestles slot machines are filled up with chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember they emptied one of them and gave us all these kids with chocolate. Yeah, the Canadians were very generous. Very generous.
When the ice cream man came, who was he selling his ice creams to? People getting off the train?
No, it was locals. There were people walking about. You may get people coming off the train, yes, that's true. Because at weekends, you used to get hikers coming down from London, especially bank holidays. It was all the loads of them just come down. So that was. Then people sometimes used to walk down to the cricket ground as well. So the people walking about. If it was Sunday, they may be going to church or something, coming back or something. He obviously found it worthwhile to park his bike there.
Do you remember the Catholic priest that's on the far loader?
That name rings a bell. Catholic priest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know him really because Tommy Hall, my friend, he was Catholic.
That's right.
Yeah.
We're talking about Tommy, who was the brother of Connell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. He was a Catholic, and I did at one time go to the Catholic church at a service there with him, I think it was. I was sort of told me the idea of becoming a Catholic, but I didn't. So I didn't pursue that any further. But the name Loder rings a bell, yeah.
Father Loder, yeah.
Of course, with regard to church, I spent a lot of time at the Memorial Hall for the Boy Scouts and various other sporting activities like table tennis and...
Did you ever camp on the common with the Boy Scouts?
No, I tell you what we did do. We built a log cabin around the back of the Memorial Hall.
All right.
I don't know where we got all the logs from, but we built it, and we had that for a time, and we used to have some of our meetings in the field at the back of the Memorial Hall, and I was also a member of the Covenanters, which was a group on a Sunday afternoon. I used to go to Covenanters. Yeah. I'm trying to think of the church name.
Sorry, what was this group?
The Covenanters?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, how can I put it? It was like a Sunday school class, if you like.
Right.
Right, we all got a badge, you know, and we were, it was called the Covenanters.
Who was it run by?
That's why I'm trying to think of the name. It was run by a chap who lived in Lovelace Close. I can't remember his name. Our scoutmaster, who lived in Orchard Road, was a Mr. Ingram. No, I lied. It was a Mr. Ingram, but he didn't leave in Orchard Close. It was before him. I can't remember his name. It might come to me. Yeah. So, as I say, most of the... Now, there was a house where Miss Poupart lived. As you come to the crossroads at the junction, do a left turn there, and go down a bit, and there was a house on the right-hand side. And Miss Poupart lived there, was a well-known character. She used to keep the key to the hall. So us kids used to go in there, get the key from her, open up and play table tennis, put the gas fire on, had a gas fire on there, gas was cheaper, had the gas fire on, warm it up, and play table tennis. And had a grand piano, which was not about it. She used to have whist rides in her house, my mother used to go to, and she used to take me along with her as a kid. And she was associated, her family was associated with the main Poupart, which is Poupart's Junction near Clapham Junction on the railway. There's a sign on the signal box, Poupart's Junction. And she had some connection with that, with the name.
How do you spell Poupart?
P-O-U-P-A-R-T. And then the brother stayed there for time, didn't he, when he just got married. Yes, he lived there for a few months. She was quite a nice person. She did a lot for the village. She was well known under the Women's Institute. Yes, now the names, as I say, the cricket club, the nearly all railway men. I used to know nearly everybody in the railway houses, from 1 to 20, 20 of them. And then you came to Old Lane, which went to the left. Dick's cousin was at the end bungalow down there, and I had a friend, Gorman, John Gorman, who later lived in one of these Georgian houses up there. The Midlands, who had a shop up there, sweet shop, just the beginning of it. I'm just trying to think of things, you know, Kathy keeps poking her nose up to me. It's not relevant, but I suppose I can
only... It's all relevant.
I can only just think of this. She can't be boring, is it?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's not boring, I've heard it. I'm just wondering if that's what you want to know, that's all.
Yeah. No, what else did you want particularly? Yeah. Yes. Two station cottages. When we first moved here, there were three of us, my brother, my sister and myself. Three in a bed. And on a summer's night, we used to lie in a bed and hear the nightingales singing in the woods opposite. Beautiful sound. And I can remember that. I haven't heard a nightingale since, I don't think. Now, another thing is, just on the downside of the railway bridge, on the upline side to Waterloo, was a shop on the left-hand side called The Halt. It was owned by the Searle family. S-E-A-R-L-E. And it was also a post office and sweet shop. We used to get our Mars bars and chocolates. And P.C. Wood, who was a local bobby, used to cycle on his bike from Effingham Village, and that was his point duty position by the telephone kiosk outside the shop at certain times of the day. And us kids always knew when he was going to be there. And so that's what I can say about that.
Did you record the nightingales?